Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, with Maddie Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Hey, make sure to check out the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Sign up for the newsletter, check out all of our latest episodes, and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. You should also go to cpbeef.com. Check out certified Piedmontese beef, this premium Nebraska beef product raised and grazed in the beautiful Sandhills region of the state, is the best out there. And you can get 25% off at cpbeef.com using the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, COMMONFAN. I have brothers who are twins. They just had a birthday. I sent them steaks from cpbeef.com, and I used the promo code COMMONFAN. I got 25% off, and it was a huge thrill. So everybody, check out cpbeef.com, use the promo code COMMONFAN, and get all the beef your heart desires. You know, get some beef for the Super Bowl. Yeah,
good move using the promo code. You are very smart in spite of what your wife says about you.
You're an intelligent human being, you know, TJ.
Despite what Matt and Jeff say about me.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. My own father cooked up some flat irons last night and sent me some pictures, and they looked delightful.
I love those CPB flat irons.
Did you charge him for those, Geoff?
Of course I did. Nothing's free in this world. Everything comes at the price.
That's right. A lesson you probably learned from him.
Exactly right.
Friend of the program, Brandon Vogel, is back with us. It's been way too long, Brandon. Of course, Brandon is the brains behind the Counter Read newsletter, counterread.com. Check it out. Subscribe. It's well worth it. It's some of the best Husker content out there. Brandon, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that cardigan.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's a really good look.
It is a little bit, has been a little bit chilly down here. We got 6 inches of snow in Tennessee a couple of weeks back. Yeah. So it was gone in like 3 days, which is the nice thing about it. Now you can just be like, yeah, it's nice it snowed.
Were you like chest out, like Nebraska roots, like all you people are panicking? I'm totally fine. I can shovel.
I've seen this before.
I know how to drive in this. I know how to do this.
Yep. I have a shovel because I am from Nebraska, so that gives me a leg up right out of the gates. And yeah, I don't panic. Although I will say, so I've been down here more than a decade now, and like your cold hardiness, it goes away quick. That has been my experience. So now when it's like 28 degrees, I'm freezing cold, and I'm like, it just used to be this way for like months at a time.
Yes, I completely agree. I was just having this conversation with somebody As Common Fan listeners know, I am in Bend, Oregon, which is not like Portland or Seattle. Like, we do get a real winter here. It's a mountain town. It gets colder, but it's not the same as the Midwest. It's not as cold as the Midwest. And I've gotten so soft in my old age. I mean, I used to just wear shorts in the winter without even thinking about it. And now it's like below 40, and I'm like, could somebody turn the heat on, please? You know, it's
Hey,
terrible.
those of us still in Nebraska, I think, are kind of losing our edge a little bit, because I get it's been a pretty mild winter, but God,
Yeah, it's
recently I
warm.
have just been freezing, and it'll be like 30 something, and I'm like layered up. I don't
Yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I think it's an as you age thing. Like,
We're all
can't
getting
handle it.
old and soft.
Yeah.
See, you are shorts all year round guy. I hate that guy. I hate shorts all year round guy.
I mean, I still wear shorts. If I'm like not going out and about, I still wear shorts a lot year round.
Oh, God.
You know, Jeff, you're so peculiar. All right, let's talk some Husker football.
Yes,
Let's do it.
please.
The benefit of the Common Fan podcast is we're not going to bother with this other stuff. We're not going to bother with the absolutely epic meltdown of the basketball team.
No.
Yeah.
We're gonna keep it focused on all Husker football all the time, because that itch always needs to be scratched,
It
and
does.
we're here to bring it to you. Brandon, you wrote an article on January 13th, so a little while ago now, but really intriguing. Common fans, after you do the paid subscription to the Counter Read newsletter, you can read this article. But it's focused on Nebraska's best path to the playoff. And thought it was really interesting. You mentioned this year's teams, Ohio State and Notre Dame, sort of more in the traditional mold. But you looked at the playoff finalists from the season before, Washington and Michigan. And here's what you had to say about that. Quote, "Michigan was there as the smashy team that played great defense and ran the ball." A little bit further along, "That's what I thought Nebraska wanted to be. But it had historically been a tear down from Michigan in recruiting, which was a tear down from Ohio State." End quote. Then a little bit later on, you say, "Washington, quote, Washington was there thanks to being uniquely experienced with an elite quarterback and a few elite playmakers or players, excuse me, surrounding him, particularly at wide receiver and in the secondary. This wasn't how Nebraska was being built a year ago, but it might be now." End quote. So, Brandon, this notion might have Common Fan heads exploding from South Sioux City to Scotts Bluff, the idea of Nebraska doing something other than getting back to its Smash Mouth roots. But I think if you say sprinkle a little playoff dust in there, people might be willing to forgive. Can you elaborate on what you meant by that?
Well, that's certainly the key. You gotta have success. If not make the playoff, at least look like you're in the hunt. So that'll be it. But yeah, so there were a lot of notable things about last year's national championship game between Michigan and Washington, you know, two teams that hadn't been there in a while. Michigan was one of those teams that like met the quote unquote blue chip ratio, you know, half their team was at least five or four stars, but just barely. And Washington, of course, didn't, but they had like a bunch of fifth and sixth year players on the O-line. They had Michael Penix Jr., and then they had maybe one of the best receiving corps in the country. Those are things that, you know, you got to be good in recruiting and using the portal, and you got to have the quarterback. But those are things that any team can do, I think. The way Michigan built it, and remember that was what, year seven, year six or seven of Jim Harbaugh, and he had the 2020 hiccup where it looked like, oh, he might be on the hot seat, and then they just went on a remarkable run. I thought, like, you go back to Matt Rhule's first press conference and you meet the coaches, and they're talking about, we're going to huddle, we're going to run the football, we'll play great defense. The great defense part has been there. Running football's been a little bit more hit or miss. Like, I thought that's the way they were going. Looking at it now, it was the first year of a 12-team playoff era under our belts. I think that's the steeper hill to climb. You know, for a long time, Michigan and Nebraska, prior to Harbaugh, were kind of like two undeniable blue bloods that you're kind of looking at and being like, well, when are they gonna get back up there and compete for national titles? Michigan did, But you look at how much the game's just changed even since the end of last season, with the rules, the house settlement, all of those things. I think they might have got in just under the wire for the way that they are chose to do things and make those three straight playoffs in Harbaugh's final three seasons.
They were also stealing everybody's signs. Let's not
Oh,
forget that.
yes, that too. Michigan Astros.
Michigan Astros.
Brandon, one critical piece, as we've kind of mentioned or alluded to, is that elite quarterback that you've got to have. In the article, you said, "Is Raiola an elite quarterback capable of carrying a less talented team into the playoff? To be determined after 2024, but I think he's close given a few more elite pieces around him." End quote. Do you think Dylan can make enough of a leap this coming season in 2025 to be that elite quarterback? And do you think the Huskers have done enough in the transfer portal and in recruiting to put those elite pieces around him?
Yeah, he certainly in my mind has kind of the makeup skill set and the work ethic to make a jump. So I do think the bigger key to that is how much talent Nebraska is able to surround him with. And this primarily probably deals with wide receiver and offensive line. There's nothing beats having elite receivers, and those are players that, it's great if you can recruit them out of high school, but wide receivers are plentiful in the portal. So you get a couple right there. So there's that piece of it. I was looking at some numbers just recently of true freshman quarterbacks, or I looked at the five-star quarterbacks since 2018. And there were only maybe seven of them, I think, that started as true freshmen, seven out of like 18 or something like that. And Dylan Raiola, whether you want to use QBR or something else, I used QBR. He was, about fifth out of those seven that started as true freshmen. So it wasn't like one of those true freshman years where I think us who watched all of the games and every play probably, could see the talent and could see the potential. You broaden the scope and look at it compared to everybody, and it's towards the bottom of an elite group. So it's interesting when looking at those, because some quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, they were just like were what they were right out of the gates. There's a couple of other examples of guys who have been climbing. Cade Klubnik at Clemson, still there. It probably the best example. So it's not impossible that a quarterback, kind of has a classic upward trajectory. I would say more often, though, for guys at least at the five-star level, the best of the best coming out of high school, they're pretty even most of the time. So which way is Raiola going to go? I'm not quite sure yet or ready to say, but I think a lot of it will depend on what happens around him at receiver in particular.
Sure. Yeah.
That's great.
Sorry, Jeff, do you think, to Matt's other question, do you think they've done enough in the portal with what they've brought in at receiver?
I like the receiver additions. None of them's kind of the classic like slam dunk. Dane Key from Kentucky might be close. Like he had some really good production on an offense that was very traditional, ran the ball a ton for a Kentucky team that had a down year. So I think there's big potential there. But I liked the receivers that Nebraska brought in last year too, Nayor and Banks. And I think Banks kind of had the season he should have had, maybe a little bit off, and Nayor was just more volatile than I think you wanted him to be the consistent big play threat, and he was the occasional big play threat. So
Yeah.
I think they've done a better job this year adding to that group, and we'll still see what happens in the post spring transfer portal. Because the other piece of this is not only is do you have at this point you're getting wide receivers. A year ago, Dylan Raiola was just a concept. Now he's a full time first. Started for an entire season, and you've got an offense that we'll see where it goes. They're not going to be the air raid, but probably going to throw the ball a little bit more, and particularly like shorter controlled passing, which is good if you're interested in putting up numbers as a pass catcher.
Well, you're talking about the weapons around him and Dylan, and if he's going to take that leap in his next year at Nebraska. So let's talk about the guy that's helping coach him. with Dana Holgorsen. You mentioned him in your article too. What's the high? It's a two-part question too. What does the hiring of Dana Holgorsen mean for this pathway to Nebraska's potential playoff berth? And since we're talking about him, the way that he was hired, because in the way that that played out, because I think what we noticed with Matt Rhule is that, and people have said it in the past, he doesn't stand pat. He's willing to kind of almost swallow his pride in some cases and say, hey, we got to make changes in these different coaching areas to make this thing work. So I guess, what does Dana Holgorsen mean for our pathway to the playoff? And then the way that he was hired, what does that tell you about Matt Rhule now?
Yeah. So the first part with Holgorsen, and I looked at some of these things that I counter read back in November when he was coming on board, but really good coaching resume when you dig into it. And like, you know, he kind of got out of West Virginia when things were in a little bit of a lull and jumped to Houston, which was an interesting move at the time. And then got fired at Houston. But you look at his OC years in particular, and even his head coaching years, he's a positive coach effect guy. McAleese Sports has numbers that they put to that I like to look at all the time. So there's that. He's been a head coach. That was something that Rhule mentioned when Holgorsen came over. I think that has additional value. And you could just kind of see it over the three games. Holgorsen's really kind of direct and to the point of like, let's just simplify this stuff. Like, it doesn't need to be this complicated. Yeah. And I mean, I think is always the important thing in football, and it's easy to get away from. So he brings that piece of it as well. What did it say about Rhule in Nebraska's tenure? I follow college football really closely, and I'm sure it's happened before. I can't recall bringing in an outside hire to be your offensive coordinator over the final quarter of the season. And, you know, it didn't start out that way. It was just an analyst. Then he got there and said, I think I can handle it. So Matt Rhule made the switch. And Nebraska at that point was on a losing streak, but was still playing to get to a bowl game. It wasn't like the season was lost, so let's just get a jump start. It was a really, really bold move. And I think if this Nebraska tenure under Rhule ends up working out, it'll be kind of looked at as one of the pivotal moments if Holgorsen's here for multiple seasons.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the defense a little bit, Brandon. I mean, that's kind of one side of the ball that immediately got better upon Rhule's arrival. You know, I think they were good in 2024. It's hard to argue they were great in 2024. But I think another piece of this hypothetical playoff formula that we're discussing would require the D to at least not fall off, and maybe even be better in 2025. You know, they lose a ton of veteran guys just who are out of eligibility, going on the NFL, going on with their lives, whatever. Nash and Ty Robinson and John Bullock and Tommy Hill. I mean, they're losing guys at every level of the defense. They lost several transfers too. But they brought in a ton of, they have brought in a ton of guys as well. John Butler's going to be your new coordinator. So just a lot in flux on that side of the ball. What's your kind of way too early assessment of the black shirts for the coming season?
Yeah, it's the tricky one with, you know, technically the offense is having coaching change too and coordinator, but it's already three games old. So we're four games old. So you don't feel that way as much. But with the coaching change, you mentioned the defense got instantly better when Matt Rhule and Tony White showed up. And, you know, we know that defense is the reactive side of the ball. And I think a lot of playing good defense is great coaching, and great coaching that gets consistent effort. So that'll get you a pretty good step of the way. And I think that's an area too, where Rhule's history comes in, and that's kind of been the case for him everywhere he's gone. Phil Snow is his Temple and Baylor defensive coordinator is obviously in the mix now as the associate head coach. So they've got a great brain trust there. They do lose a lot. Like it starts up front with Huttmacher and Robinson. I mean, when you look at that Ohio State team that just steamrolled to the national championship after a out of nowhere loss to Michigan, and Nebraska's defensive line controlled a lot of that game. And you know, if it doesn't give up a long pass play to Jonathan Smith, maybe the best receiver in the country as a true freshman, like that game goes differently. And I mean, Nebraska still had a chance to win it, or at least tie it with the ball, and didn't end up working out. So it's going to be tough to replicate that. Like, I think there's some good players on the front. The biggest area for improvement, though, is the one that Butler handled, in my opinion. You know, Nebraska's secondary was a little bit prone to those big plays. It didn't look the same way we saw it last year. So, you know, whether that's a new set of eyes with a new assistant for that group, or just experience, or maybe some additions, that group's got a little bit to prove. So when you talk about this big picture wise, I think they gave up about 22 points a game. I think for Nebraska to be a team, like if we're talking about, okay, well, what would it take to compete for the playoff? You probably got to stay around that number. And hopefully, you know, your defense is at 28 over 30 would be even better. You do that, and all of a sudden you're in the mix, because you're probably at least a 9-win team at that point.
Just so you know, TJ, I don't know if you caught that there, but he said that Nebraska gave up a big play to Smith with a chance to tie the game. And Notre Dame's game played out almost exactly like that too. So Notre Dame almost won the national title if we want to look at it from that aspect as well. So
Define almost, Jeff.
yeah, I would say Nebraska played Ohio State much closer
it
than
almost
Notre
played
Dame
out the
did.
exact same
Actually,
way
in fact,
when the entire world
yeah.
was watching them under the big lights. In another recent article, Brandon, you looked at each Big Ten team's odds to win a national championship in 2025, according to DraftKings. And speaking of DraftKings, Matty O is certainly excited about that, being the degenerate gambler that he is. No offense, Matty O. How are things
Me?
going for you, by the way? How are your
No,
books looking right now?
degenerate's a strong word. I like to place a wager every once in a
Yeah.
while. It's not degenerate. We're not betting
Underwater.
betting WNBA here, guys.
Underwater,
Okay?
above, underwater, above water. How we doing?
You're a
We're doing
degenerate,
great.
no offense.
The CFP went well.
All right,
CFP went
very
well.
good. Yeah. Well, Brandon, in that article, you said that Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State are the three Big Ten teams with the best odds to win it all in 2025. But what me and the other common fans here found, and TJ mentioned at the beginning, it's very interesting, is Nebraska has the exact same odds as, wait for it, 2024 playoff team Indiana. What the hell is up with that?
Well, so that headline, Nebraska is this year's Indiana, was a little bit of a play on words, because we don't know if 2025 Indiana is 2024 Indiana, which would be the
Right.
operative question, of course. But yeah, so from there, from those top three of Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, it goes Michigan, USC, and then Indiana, Nebraska tied at plus 15,000, which are not good odds. Those are less than 1% odds to win the net. We're talking about win the national title here too. But that's up from where they were a year ago. A year ago they were plus 20,000, which is, I think, it's ninth in the Big Ten. So it's seeing a little bit of progress for Nebraska. When you factor in everything you have to do to put a number on something, you know, schedule, rosters. That's the other thing about when they put these things out this early. Like, I don't even know, the portal's not done, and you know, we're not
Yeah.
towards spring football. But I always find value in them, even with all of those caveats of like, okay, well, here's how, you know, the people who have things actually at stake, you know, it's not like me, just a sports writer saying whatever I happen to think that day. They put Nebraska right around 6-7 in the Big Ten, and that's up from probably 8-9-10 range, depending on where you looked a year ago.
Yeah, I'm just glad they acknowledge us. I'll take that.
Hey, so it's a slow climb back to relevancy, guys. You're not just going to shoot up
Yeah.
there right away.
Yeah.
It doesn't
Others
happen.
receiving consideration.
Yeah. Brandon, in that article Jeff just brought up, you also looked at a number of way too early top 25 rankings for 2025. What are some of your main takeaways from that, either Nebraska focused or otherwise?
Yeah. So Nebraska in Mark Schlabach's way too early at ESPN was got in the also considered group, so just outside the top 25, but none of the six that I had looked at from like kind of the major outlets, Fox Sports, et cetera, had Nebraska in that group. And I think that's going to kind of be the offseason consensus with the Huskers. They'll be close, but maybe not quite there. But looking at it from a Big Ten perspective, Ohio State kind of leads the way, which I get nervous about this because like Ohio State's never had a problem replacing all of the talent they lose annually to the NFL, but they do lose quite a bit. And they're still going to have Jonathan Smith, still going to have Caleb Downs, two of the best players in the country. They'll have a new quarterback. Just shockingly, this week lost their defensive coordinator to Penn State, which is maybe the biggest coaching move in the country in a year where we didn't have a lot of head coaching hires. So that's a big piece. Point is, Buckeyes more than deserve kind of their favorite status. I don't think I would have them there. And I certainly wouldn't have them as the number one team going into to 2025. Stuart Mandel had Penn State, which I think is an intriguing pick when you look at what they bring back. And that was before they made that defensive coordinator hire of Jim Knowles from Ohio State. Illinois, going to be really good. Brings back a ton. Maybe getting a little bit overvalued. I think they're around 12, 13 in some of these. I really like Minnesota, a team Nebraska plays. In fact, when
Sorry.
I said in there, PJ Fleck, I know a lot of people get irked by PJ Fleck, but it's tough to argue with his results, and they bring a ton back. In fact, when you look at Nebraska's schedule, which is another thing that I think comes into like playoff talk for any team in the country, that Minnesota game looks like the swing game to me. I know we're way far out, but that's going to be a big one on the road in Minneapolis for Nebraska. So other than that, these way two top 25s kind of have their own rhythm and cadence. It becomes pretty familiar and not too many surprises that I saw from the six that I looked at.
I cannot handle losing to PJ Fleck again. We have to win that game. We absolutely have to win that game.
I penciled that in as a loss, unfortunately, but you're right. They do need to win that
Oh.
game. I just
Well,
don't
the
see it
tee off
happening.
in Lincoln has it as a
Well,
loss. Well, geez.
how many wins did you end up with, Jeff?
I had nine
Nine.
wins. Yeah. So these other two Yahoos, I think, had 10. So they're
Well,
really
Brandon,
drinking the
you
Kool-Aid.
probably watched our way too early 2025 schedule predictions episode, Brandon, or listened to it. Did you
I
not?
hadn't seen that one yet. I
Riveting
apologize.
stuff. Riveting
Okay.
stuff.
You're just behind. It's in the queue, I'm sure. Let's talk. We've talked about Matt Rhule a little bit. Let's talk about him a little bit more because one of your more recent articles took a look at his first 2 years at Nebraska and kind of compared that to, I think you said there were 141 Power Conference head coaching hires since 2007. What you did as a baseline is used Elo ratings as sort of a baseline to measure all the coaches. What the hell is an Elo rating? Just side
Yeah,
note.
I'll, no, I'm glad you asked because it's important to know, and I'll try to not bog things down with a lengthy description. It was created to rate chess players, and I guess the important thing to know is that it can carry over. Like you could start Nebraska's Elo ratings in 1900 and just carry them over all the way to today, and you could just see the ups and downs the whole way through. So it's valuable for this because one of the things I wanted was to know how good teams were when coaches inherited them. So this allows you to do that. It's basically just a power rating that's opponent adjusted. So you get more credit, you get more points. It's literally points for beating a team that you shouldn't beat, and you get fewer points if you're were a 30-point favorite and you ended up winning that game.
Who
So.
develops the Elo ratings for college football teams or coaches?
There's a lot of different places out there that do that. These are from College Football Database, but they're named after the guy who created them for chess. Forgetting his Laszlo Elo, I think is his first name. Anyways.
What a name. Laszlo Elo. Let's get he's out he belongs on the all name team. All right, so good for Mr. Elo. What's your takeaway based on the Elo ratings. What's your takeaway of Matt Rule's performance at Nebraska so far?
Yeah, so I first looked at this after Nebraska had lost to USC, and looking at, you know, all those hires since 2007, which is when Nick Saban was hired. So you've kind of got the top of the scale, as we know now, already set. And at that point, you know, Nebraska had gotten just a little bit worse. Its ELO rating was a little bit down after year one of Matt Rule from what it was. Could just be a little bit of noise in there. Nothing to worry about. In fact, the average hire over this span, that's what happens. And, you know, we kind of know that intuitively, right? Like a new coach comes in. It's great what Kurt Cignetti did at Indiana, but that's not how it usually goes. You kind of need a reset year most of the time. But the worrisome thing at the point of that USC loss was they were down again just a little bit from year one to year two. And the group of coaches who had had two consecutive years of ELO decreases was not the group you wanted to be in. I think there were 30 of them, and I counted two that I would qualify as a success. It was David Shaw at Stanford, which they got worse from like where Jim Harbaugh had left that program, but they weren't bad. And then Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri had kind of a slow start, but Missouri was a preseason playoff team going into 2024, and they're showing up in all the way too early top 25s again in 2025. Well, it was a remote possibility, and Nebraska needed to make a bowl game to do this. Rule turned things around with that Wisconsin win and the win over Boston College. So Nebraska ended up a little bit positive after year two. So that's good. You're no longer in that group of 30 for whatever, whatever that's worth. And now when you look at it kind of big picture, and I extended this out for the piece that you mentioned to look at 5-year trajectories now, since, you know, we can kind of try to start to extrapolate that and see what we learn. Rule's in a kind of a middle ground, like it's a could go either way based on what we've seen historically, which is better than it was, you know, middle of November. Right now, by the numbers, like his coaching tenure at Nebraska is probably most similar to Billy Napier's, which Billy Napier spent a ton of time on the hot seat on 2025 or 2024. But that Florida team was good. Just had a nightmare schedule, and now they're a team that's getting a little bit of positive upward trend for 2025. So we'll see where things go, but it's interesting, and this is all changing too, you know, I think with the transfer portal era. But that's where Nebraska sits based on that methodology.
We like data and analytics and ratings as much as anybody. I mean, you can find out a lot from that. But setting all that aside, what's your sense of what Rule can do in year three at Nebraska?
Yeah. I think we know the urgency is pretty high. We can infer that from Rule, you know, what we talked about earlier, making the hire of Holgorsen when he did. And Nebraska is kind of a murky team for me at this point in the off season. Like I just went through using another set of power rankings, and like I think they'll be about 7.5 wins in terms of their over under whenever those come out, probably in a couple of weeks. And it's all about like where do you go from there? So, you know, to take us back to kind of where we started, you know. Feel like you got a quarterback. You know, you asked me, is he the guy who can carry you there? That part I'm not quite as sure about, but I don't think he's the guy who's going to hold you back from getting there.
Sure.
Which is a pretty big advantage in today's college football, just to have a returning quarterback, but also one you feel really, really good about. A lot of it comes down to, I think, how well this transition to Butler defensively works out, because Nebraska's biggest upside is increased offense, but it can't come with obviously a big decrease defensively. So they need to upgrade their talent level. I think if we're going to talk about like making a big jump, well, they could make a big jump in year three, but sustaining that, there's still a talent level upgrade I think that needs to happen. This 2024 season was interesting. It a certain point before they beat Wisconsin, I kind of felt like it's not going to look like progress at the end of the year. The bowl win counted for more than I probably gave it credit for going in. So the picture's a little bit better than I thought it was going to be in November as the season was winding down.
Okay.
Beauty. Brandon, we checked off a ton of things on our Husker list this year in terms of getting to a bowl game, winning the damn thing, finishing with a positive record. We won a one-score bowl game. It was a good season. Husker fans they're happy. And key word here now is for now, right? Like you can never keep us happy for too long. We're always wanting more. So 7-6 is great for this year, but it's probably not going to be good enough for 2025 unless you think otherwise. But that's just our personal opinion here. What do you think Rhule needs to do to keep this train on the tracks this coming season? Is there a record he needs to have? Like I predicted a 9-3 regular season. Does he need to beat Iowa or beat Minnesota or all of the above? What do you think about that?
Beating Iowa would be nice, but 1-11 won't do it,
Yeah, right.
obviously. So I really think for a power conference, for most power conference teams, like Purdue in 2025, maybe a little bit different, starting over under a new coach, though a hot and trendy coach in Barry Odom. The goal is to compete for the playoff, is to be in the mix at least. And we only have 1 year to go on, but I'm really, as I look towards this offseason and like trying to forecast, college football teams, which is one of my favorite things to do, I think a lot of this is about how good is your run up to those first college football playoff rankings. Not that that's like the magic date, but in this past season, 10 of the 12 teams that made it were ranked in the top 13 in the first rankings. So
Wow.
SMU was 13th. So the only in Clemson, Clemson was kicking around and got in because they won their conference. They were down towards like, 22 somewhere around there. The only team that wasn't ranked at all was Arizona State, which also got there, the last day by winning its conference. So Indiana was in there. That's kind of I think the game. And when I look at, okay, if somebody told me come up with your 12-team playoff tomorrow, I'd run a bunch of numbers and like look at who are the teams most likely to be like maybe 6-2, probably 7-1. In Nebraska in 2025 has a schedule that's you never want to call it easy or favorable even because Indiana was an automatic win, right? Last year at this point, and all of a
Yeah.
sudden things change, particularly in this era with the transfer portal. But when you look at the schedule with the tools that we have, yeah, I could see Nebraska being 6-2, 7-1 by the time you get to that stage. Now they got to go and do it, and what that means is you don't lose the Illinois game like they did last year. And Illinois ended up being, a really good team. But it's those kind of games. Michigan, I think it this year for Nebraska, that's a home game for Nebraska. It's early in the year. Right now, I think you'd probably make the Wolverines like a 3 or 4 point favorite. So that's pretty close to toss-up territory. If you want to be a team that instantly inserts yourself into the playoff discussion, you got to keep winning. You win a game like that. So that's the next challenge for Nebraska in getting some of those games, and losing, the Illinois UCLA games, like
Yeah.
without even putting a number on it, that would be it. Nebraska lost two Big Ten games as a home favorite. Like that's you got to get past that hurdle,
Can
and
happen.
then kind of the record takes care of itself.
Yeah.
Is there, Brandon, when it, what made me think of this is when you mentioned the Illinois game where a foot or two closer to Luke Lindenmeyer. That pass is 2 feet closer to Luke Lindenmeyer in the end zone. It's a touchdown, and then we miss a field goal on the next play and then fall apart in overtime. So it's not like we fell apart. The Huskers fell apart that game. I mean, the defense maybe wasn't as good as people expected, but it was a battle. It was a back and forth battle. The Huskers played, overall, the offense still hadn't fallen completely. They still were okay at that point, right? But we've just seen too many games like that where it's close, or the UCLA game where we didn't really show up, and because they weren't very good, we made it a game but couldn't get over the hump, get all the way back. We've done it in so many different ways, but almost always, at least in the last 10 years or so, Nebraska ends up on the losing side of those games. Is getting on the right side of those games, is it as simple as, like, they were better when it came to turnovers this year? Is it as simple as continuing to improve on turnover margin, fixing special teams? Is it tangible stuff that happens on the field, or is there like some sort of, I mean, we're happy to punch a voodoo doll or burn some old Husker memorabilia or whatever it might take to like start getting on the right side of some of these games. But I mean, it does feel like there's kind of an intangible mental hurdle at that's hovering over the program right now.
Yeah, it seems like there was still some residue of that, doesn't it? At least that's the way, I would put that, and it's interesting because I do think, and I got this sense from Rule, I don't think he ever directly said it, but you could just kind of tell when some of those games happened that it's like, oh yeah, this is still around, isn't it? But I think enough has changed with Nebraska in terms of roster turnover, but also the coaching staff and like the entire operation, that the players that have memories of like, oh, we're just the snake bitten team, 2021 being the classic example. Like, there's probably less of that now than there was. And I think, not to relitigate the Frost era, like we did an entire podcast on that. You can go back and listen to that.
That's right.
Like, not only did that happen to Nebraska all the time, those one score losses, but like they talked about it a lot. And with Rule, I think the difference has been, in fact, he'll outright say, it'd be like, that's not for me. Like, that doesn't apply to us. Even if like we can all look at it and be like, yeah, maybe it still does a little bit. So I do think there is an intangible piece of that Nebraska's still got to shake, and it should get a little bit easier to shake each successive year. So we'll see. To the tangible items, I think you hit on the two quickest like shortcuts to, hey, here's how this goes from 6-6 regular season to 9-3, which it could have very easily been. Special teams have not been an advantage for Nebraska in maybe a decade. So like I'm consistently like, just be like net average, just be like the average college football special teams, and you'd probably see at least you'd probably win an extra game a year that way. The turnover piece of it, Nebraska was positive early on. Things were going in a good direction. Finished minus two on the year, so Nebraska had a positive turnover margin in the Big Ten era one time, one time. So,
Was it 2016?
yep.
Yeah.
And I think
Good job, TJ. Well
they
done.
were pl
Thank you,
plus
Jeffrey.
five. Let me check, plus five. So not like hugely positive. I look at this. I have a list from 2000. That's just in one of my notebooks. And I marvel at it, and I'm just like, that's what it's going to be one of these times. Like Nebraska's just going to have one of those years where they go plus eight, plus nine, plus 10. And they're going to win a bunch of games because they finally did that. However, whether it was, turnovers, luck, if it was earned, whatever it was. But the thing is like, I don't think you can coach it any more than it has been coached at Nebraska. It just needs to happen.
I think the snake bitten mental aspect of it is kind of already showing its way out the door. I'm curious to see what it'll be like coming off a year where we made a bowl game and just slowly getting these things off our back. I think that's going to do a ton for the mental side of our team going forward. So, bowl game
That's
done.
an interesting take, Jeff. I was fully expecting you to say we needed to behead Little Red or something to reverse
We'll
this
talk
curse.
about that off air, okay? I've got a
Yeah, we'll
plan,
talk
though.
about that offline.
Foolproof plan.
I love it.
Now,
I have one more question, Matt. Jeff, do you guys have anything else?
No,
No, go ahead.
I'm good.
Okay. Well, just kind of random, Brandon. And it's interesting, we talked multiple times throughout this podcast just today about sort of the talent piece of this and have the, do they have elite wide receivers that can help get them over the hump, or do they need another upgrade, or do they need to, get better in the talent category before we're really talking playoff, whatever. I feel like we are in this cycle as Husker fans, like last year, like Banks and Nayer, Banks had good numbers at Wake Forest. Nayer, was coming from Texas, and I think he had been good at Wyoming before that. And I feel like this always happens. Like, I don't, the two guys that come to mind are Dedrick Mills and Omar Manning. And I think Dedrick Mills was like the number one junior college running back when he came to Nebraska. And Omar Manning was like the top receiver, JUCO receiver or
One of them,
something, one of
certainly.
them. Yeah. When he came to Nebraska. And that, like, those guys contributed. They sweated and bled for this team. They're Huskers for life. This is no knock on those guys. But I do feel like everyone, I think right now we're our I saw somewhere on Twitter or something, our transfer portal hall of wide receivers is ranked like two in the country or something. And it's just sort of like, how do common fans, and maybe we don't really, maybe we won't ever know until they play on the field. But it's just, we by August we'll all have talked ourselves into, well, we got Dane Key from Kentucky.
Going to win the Biletnikoff.
He's gonna be an All-American. Like, we got this Hunter guy from Cal, and he's got 3 years of eligibility left. Of course we're going to the playoff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how do we, I think everyone is excited and like don't want to dampen any enthusiasm, but how do we try to have some semblance of a realistic expectation for some of these guys? Because not all, because only one can win the Biletnikoff, or
That's true.
the Heisman. I mean, right, we're reserving the Heisman for Dylan, of course. So,
Touche.
yeah.
If one of Nebraska's receivers wins the Biletnikoff, I'll make the bold prediction that Devin Ryola probably is at least in New York. If not, if he doesn't win it. Yeah, it's I've tried to crack this like transfer portal production thing from a numbers perspective like a year now, and I just haven't kind of found a good way into it. But my gut feeling is like always give me proven production over measured talent, whether that be as a JUCO recruit, a high school recruit. Williams Duoneri, the kid from Missouri, like great take. A lot of people, almost any team in the country would have taken him. I don't know what to do with him because he didn't play a ton, and as a five star, like why didn't you play a ton at Missouri? There's circumstances that certainly make that totally a reasonable decision for Missouri to make. So he's a player who like he needs to be good for Nebraska. But in the case of, well, using Omar Manning, a guy Scott Frost was asked about at every practice for like 18 straight months. And Nebraska has had some success, of course, in the transfer portal at wide right receiver specifically, Samori Toure, proven production guy. I have a soft spot for FCS transfers generally. Trey Palmer, of course. And I'm forgetting somebody else who was right before those two. Anyway, and I think Ja'Cory Barney and Banks and Nayor, those were your top three leading receivers. So it's not like they missed on Banks and Nayor. It's just there's no, from what I've seen of Nebraska's transfer additions, like there's no like slam dunks here of like, oh yeah, you just plug that guy in and let him do what he's going to do, and all of a sudden you're like two letter grades better at that position. But they've had a good portal, I think, and I like their additions overall. Are they going to come out net ahead from with what they lost because the losses were heavy? They're probably not, and I think that's just reality. And to expect them to is a little bit unrealistic when you look at just players like Butler leaving. That was a guy who you wanted to be here starting for you for another season, and he's going to do that at LSU. So is there a way to know? I haven't figured it out yet. I've been trying for a long time. But I do like the give me guys who are experienced, who have played, and I'll take those. And if it ends up being, another Banks, it's kind of like, well, you got what you went out and were looking for with him, at least, even if it wasn't, a singular season.
when you do figure it out and you want to tell the world, you're welcome to do so on the Common Fan podcast.
Yeah.
You got to make sure they have a good ELO rating, right? Just a good ELO rating.
That's right.
Double check the ELO rating. Have you factored in, as you try to figure out the transfer portal thing, have you factored in ELO ratings for that?
No, there's another number for that. It's kind of like a net wins. So you can try and break down players for like, oh yeah, you know, Jamari Butler, which this is a good number for a defensive lineman. He contributed like 0.1 wins every time he was out there over a 12 game.
So like war, kind of like war in baseball.
Yeah, very, very similar. So it's there. And when you look at Nebraska's transfers out that way, you know, all of which kind of, you know, makes sense to their own degree. Like Butler's one of the heaviest losses for a defensive lineman. Even Mekhi Bayer was one of the better rated linebackers to go in the portal and find someplace else. And I mean, you can just look at where they're ending up. The Florida State thing's obviously a little bit of a gray area, but these guys aren't transferring down, at least in terms of the guys that they lost in the portal this season.
Fantastic conversation with friend of the program, Brandon Vogel. Thank you so much for joining the Common Fans again, Brandon. Any final thoughts from you, Brandon? Everybody check out counterread.com. Check out all of Brandon's great work there and subscribe for crying out loud, Common Fans. You got to feed the addiction. You got to feed the addiction in the off season. So you're frothing at the mouth at Arrowhead Stadium come August. All right. Everybody got that?
Yep.
Absolutely. No, just thanks again for having me. Of course, we've done a handful of shows together and I always love doing it. If people are interested in some of the stuff that we talked about here, you can go there and do sign up. That gets you access for at least 7 days to read anything, whether it's, you know, for paid subscribers or whatnot. And this is kind of what my off season is like these weird ideas and pushing numbers around a little bit to see what we can prove or at least try to learn about Nebraska. So it's a fun time of year for me.
Nice. Well, and we love it too, Brandon. We love your stuff.
Yeah, we do.
Absolutely. And you mentioned our Reckoning series. Everyone go check that out. We looked at every coach of the post-Osborne era. We're noodling on some off-season ideas for this summer, Brandon. We haven't really figured out what that's going to be yet, but
I can do an episode about breaking the curse. I've got ideas on that, guys. A lot of ideas, okay? So if you want me to do,
thanks,
I've
Jeff.
Got the bullet point.
Thanks, Jeff. Matt, can you mute him? Thanks, Jeff. That's good, Jeff.
There we go. That's better.
Jeff. Good job. Everybody's proud of you.
That's better.
I've got ideas.
Oh, he's great. Back. Dang it. The Dang mute it. Only lasts so long. Sorry, guys.
You got to get the paid subscription, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Brandon. Great to see you, man. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks, Brandon.
As always, Common Fans, we'll be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.